morning, everybody. Now, I'm sure you'll have all read through the results, so I'm conscious they're not that long. So really, this is about giving you a chance to ask any questions. Just while you're gathering your thoughts, what I thought I'd do is briefly pull out a few key headlines from the quarter for you. And I think I best summarise that as we've continued to do the right things and remain disciplined while making good progress on the transformation, and positioning ourselves well as we look ahead. So the first thing I'd highlight is that despite challenging market conditions, we've continued to grow own brand policies. So we were really pleased to have maintained the strong growth in both commercial and green flag that we delivered through the first half of the year. In home, as we expected and I think highlighted at the half year, the market has got more challenging in the second half. And so whilst we continue to grow, the rate of growth has slowed. And finally, in motor, our own brand policy count stabilised, reflecting our improved competitiveness as we began seeing some of the benefits of our new system coming through. The second point I was going to make is that having been at COP26 last week, it would be remiss of me not to mention the progress we're making on climate strategy, which is one part of how we're positioning the business for the future. So we've committed, as we've told you before, to the Race to Zero, and we're working to set science-based targets covering scopes 1, 2, and 3 emissions. But also, I'm really clear that for all the talk of commitments, which is important, we've also got to keep it simple for customers to go green themselves. And that's why we are excited to launch our new electric vehicle proposition for Direct Line. It makes the switch to electric easier for customers and builds on our already strong position in the growing EV market. So alongside the benefits that we're seeing coming through from our new motor platform, there's a real sense of momentum in the business as we head into the new year. And the third point I was going to draw out is that we're on track for the full implementation of the FCA's pricing practices review, having successfully met the product governance deadline in the third quarter. Now, as with any large regulatory change, we expect there to be volatility in the market in the first few months of next year as the new rules bed in. However, over the medium term, there'll be no changes in the attributes required to be successful in this market, such as strong brands, great customer service, and so on and so forth. So we remain confident in our outlook. So summing up, our transformation progress, delivery of new propositions and improved competitiveness, combined with our focus on disciplined underwriting, means we're well placed as we look ahead. And that's why we've reiterated our combined operating ratio guidance of 93 to 95 over the medium term, normalised for weather, of course, and to be between 90 and 92% in 2021. Now, just before I pass back to Juan to open the lines for Q&A, I just want to remind everybody of our Investor Insight session that we'll be holding on our commercial business on the 17th of November. As I've told you before, it's an area of our business that's furthest through its transformation, and that's driven the strong growth that you've seen in today's results and throughout this year. So we're really looking forward to giving you a bit more colour and insight as to how we've achieved it. So I will pause there, and I will pass back to Juan to see whether you've got any questions on the line. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind, please press star followed by two. Please note, the questions will be kept to a maximum of two per person. When preparing to ask a question, please ensure your phone is unmuted locally. And our first question comes from James Pearce from Jefferies. Please, James, your line is now open.
Yeah, thanks. Hi. Hey, guys. Hey, yeah, I hope you're all well. Just two questions from me, please. So another strong quarter for commercial. How sustainable are those levels of growth in that business going forward? And then the second question is, can you give us an idea of the percentage point benefit that the claims repair network gives you in terms of claim severity inflation? Or, I guess, put another way, what is the difference between the level of severity on claims that go through your garage network and severity inflation outside of your network? Thank you.
Yeah, sure. So commercial, I think the first thing is what's driving the growth, and I think there are probably three things underpinning that growth. The first is that we've invested in technology that's enabled us to really support customer service over the last few years. So we won another award for our kind of broker hub, electronic hub last week. And you can see both in the broker side and the customer side that the service levels and flexibility that people have is ahead of most of the market. So that's the first big winner. And I think alongside that, that held up through COVID, unlike some of the competitors. So that's been a real advantage. The second thing that's driving it is we've got pricing models in there. We've had Radar Live in for some time. It's the first part of the business that's done that, which has enabled us to really start refining the pricing in those areas. And that in itself has given us benefits through this year as well and has driven some of that growth. And the third thing is that the market has hardened throughout this year in commercial, to some extent in the SME space, less than other parts of the market. But what that's meant is kind of more business has been coming to market than usual. So when I look forward, I think the momentum that drives the first two of those continues. I think we'd expect to see the market get more competitive again as it does in its sort of natural cycle as we move into 22 and beyond. So what does that mean? So when we look at this business, we don't see something that's growing at 12-15% per annum as it has done this year. We think that's probably a bit rich because it's had the additional tailwind of the market. But we do see a business that can grow upper single digits going forward on a sort of continuing basis, and that's how we view it. So we're pretty proud of what it's done this year. The second one on kind of the benefit of network and severity inflation generally. I'll give you a feel for what's happening in severity. I think the first thing is we know we have an advantage because there is benchmarking done across the industry and so on, so we can very, very literally see that. We don't give that detail out, James, because it's clearly very commercially sensitive in terms of the points differential and so on. But to give you a flavor of what's going on in severity generally, I think we've been kind of, I think we flagged at Q1, we're probably slightly above our usual 3 to 5% range. At Q2, we said it was sort of coming in just inside. Broadly, it's running around somewhere the top of that 3 to 5% range. It may be slightly outside that if you include some of the real COVID factors that are still having a little bit of effect. So people driving premium cars, for instance, cleaning costs, those sorts of things are still knocking around. But the biggest driver at the moment that's putting kind of upward pressure in there and will be around, I suspect, for a little while is secondhand car costs, where you've seen a big spike because of consumer demand and lack of availability in the new car market. So I think we kind of expect to see some continued inflation, probably somewhere around the top end of that range, as we have through this year, driven by that effect, and to see that for some months yet, I think. What does having a network do for us in that guise? Certainly, we have been able to manage some of those costs in a different way. We've been able to be more flexible in certain areas. We've been able to flex what we do on the repair side. So we know that there are benefits from having the repair networks that come through, especially when things spike. But I can't give you the numbers for competitive reasons, I'm afraid.
No, that's fair enough. No, that's very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Greg Patterson from KBW. Please, Greg, your line is now open.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me?
Hi, Greg. How are you?
No, surviving. Two quick questions. One is, in home, due to the FCA pricing review, you've consistently said that you're moving renewal rates down in a steady way to achieve the pricing rules by the first of next year. I was wondering in percentage terms how much Further, you need still need to go to achieve that on the renewal pricing. And the second thing, in commercial lines in the third quarter, I was including NIG and the SME area, decline for business. What is the net rate that you are carrying year on year, premium rate minus claims inflation? Thank you.
Brilliant, thanks, Greg. FCA pricing, and where are we? So I guess, and in particular, kind of focused on home. Well, first thing to say is we're on track, because I think that matters. Second thing is we've delivered all the product fairness elements, which I think is relevant to your question. And we're set for year end, if you like. What's happened on renewals? Now, we've said over the last 3 years that we've been progressively tightening, setting margins in the book with which we're comfortable, and bringing those in. And we set those basically at the 5-year, 10-year point primarily. So as we come into this year, we've been kind of dealing with those tails each year. We've done a bit more today, a bit more over the course of this year, which you can sort of see in the AVP numbers. So even though I think the AVP on home overall is pretty flat, even though we've been putting inflation through on, as we go, and that's because the other side of that is we've done a little more tightening in those margins at the end tenure. So when we actually put the sort of product fairness elements in, the product governance elements of the rules in September, we didn't make a step change for that because we had been doing that incrementally over a number of years. It's perhaps the best indicator I can give you. I think the remaining bit, therefore, when the pricing rules come in is the leveling up of the early 10 years. And that's kind of the process that will happen in the early part of next year. So perhaps that gives you a feel for what's happened in that space. I think on commercial...
Penny, is that going to be dramatic? I'm just trying to, is it something we need to be... we're going to be shocked by, or is it going to be fairly second order? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I'm not going to make predictions. It's illegal for me to price indicate, so I need to tread with a little bit of caution. But if you look back to even the kind of the FCA original business case and so on, you can see that there's a not insignificant correction in the numbers, in the new business numbers in the home book when they did their modelling. So I don't think it's unreasonable to, if they got their modelling right, to expect something. And I think the other thing that people will have to think about is what's coming through in inflation, and inflation in home has been running, top end of 3 to 5, and really with one eye on what's happening, construction costs and so on. So actually, there is bits of inflation out there. So I'm not sure it's about, the other thing I'd say is it will vary, but from segment to segment, brand to brand, channel to channel. So when I say that we expect some volatility at the beginning of next year, I think, people will put their rates into the market on day one, and then there'll be a process. Remember, it takes six weeks or so. The renewal notices go out about 6 weeks ahead of renewal dates, so there'll be some time before it's clear what all the effects are on both new business and renewals, and you should expect, I think, the market to make adjustments as all those data points become clear. So I think it will be, and we've kind of flagging that there'll be volatility in Q1. And I wouldn't overread any particular direction that you see in that for any particular player, because I think that will all kind of even out across that, across that quarter, if that helps at all. I think the important thing, and when you stand back, is, we have the levers we need. We've got experience in this market. We're comfortable with our positioning coming in. We've been really careful in home to take our volumes early in the year before it got too competitive. We've backed off a little bit as things have got competitive in the second half. So we're very comfortable with where we're coming into that process, and then we've got the levers to deal with it. and we will all see kind of what the best route through the early weeks is when everybody's prices are in the market. You asked a question on commercial as well about rate carry. Yes, I don't think we've given the rate carry numbers in here, but we are carrying ahead of inflation, around 6 points, something like that. Inflation running, you know, in the, you know, 3%, 3-4%, somewhere around there.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you. The next question comes from Freya Kohn from Bank of America. Please, Freya, your line is now open.
Hi, good morning. Two questions, please. So firstly, given that you've talked about severity sort of getting worse since H1, driven by used car prices and market pricing remaining quite stubborn, how comfortable are you in being able to price for severity inflation going into next year? And secondly, could you comment a bit more about the competitive dynamics that you're seeing in home, given the slowdown in growth that we've seen in Q3? Do you think this will continue into 2022, or is it very dependent on the FCA trading volatility? Thanks.
Brilliant. Hi, good morning, Freya. Look, on motor first, look, I think the punchline on motor is, you know, if you look at the ABI data, the market's down about 7% year on year. For us, we're pretty flat. So what's going on there? Well, the reality is that the market adjusted in January to lower frequency, and it hasn't really risen since, and there, you know, lots of good reasons that that might be the case. So, you know, whiplash and so on and so forth that could be driving that. But however it's got there, it's kind of reduced for lower frequency and hasn't really risen as a whole. You know, there's been variation within it, but as a whole, we've reduced a shallower amount, and we've been passing inflation through, to your point, throughout the second half of the year. So we lost share in the first half because because we've taken a shallower route and we started pricing inflation towards the end of the first half. But actually, as we've come through the second half, we've improved our competitiveness, if I could say the word, as we've started to see the pricing benefits coming from the new platform launch. And so even though we've been putting inflation through, we've still seen benefits, and that's why we've kind of stabilized the policy counts regardless of putting inflation through. So, you know, it's very clear that, you know, our aim is to continue pricing severity through, and we wait with curiosity to see where the rest of the market will, and when the rest of the market will start pushing. On home, yeah, you're right. Home has done, I'd like to say we've got a crystal ball, but that's not the case, but home has done kind of exactly what we predicted it would do. It's been pretty flat with relatively low inflation and relatively low premium inflation for the last few years. And it kind of remained so at the start of the year. We pushed pretty hard, and actually we had what Kate would call manufacturing benefits coming through, strong claims management and so on, that enabled us to grow and improve our loss ratio through the first half, which is the magic you always want to replicate. Now, as we moved into the second half, it's got more competitive. We think by September, again, it was something like 7% off year on year the home market. Now, our read on that, and why did we expect it? Because logically, long-term customer values increase in a post-pricing practices world. So our belief is that that is driven by pricing practices and people's entry points into pricing practices trying to drive share as we go into that. If that's the case, then logically, people will adjust that thinking as they get into the post-pricing practices world, what they do, you know, what that does to price for them to judge rather than us. But as I say, we're pretty comfortable on home with where we're coming in to pricing practices to be able to kind of hold rate coming through and still be holding the book flat, growing slightly after strong growth in the first half. You know, feeling pretty positive with that. Pause there.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you. The next question comes from Thomas Bateman from Berenberg. Please, Thomas, your line is now open.
Hi, morning, Kay. Hi, I hope you're
doing
well.
Good morning.
On the motor pricing, I think, you know, investors are looking from the outside are seeing pricing down 7%, claims inflation 5%, and there's a big kind of 12-point gap there. And I think there's lots of moving parts in between, you know, driving behaviour, whiplash, new cars, etc. But I don't know, can you help us, give us numbers to bridge the gap as to why, you know, that it's not a 12-point gap for the rest of the market? And the second question is just on the transformation changes. You know, there's a lot of good talk about the improving accuracy and the pricing, but, you know, when do we should we expect to see sort of a change in the direction of travel for both motor and home, or a more material change in the direction of travel policy counts on both motor and home?
Okay, love the challenging tone of the second question. I'll come back to that. That's all right, it's fine. So market, I mean, I can only do so much to tell you why other people are pricing where they're pricing. That's for them to tell you. Let me give you, if I can fill in some components, if you like, that might be the case. So I think you're right that, you know, the answer lies between claims frequency, severity, and, you know, including whiplash, and preparation for pricing practices, and only other people can tell you how they're drawing those lines. But what's happening on frequency? I think we said at half year, driving miles are pretty much up where they were pre-COVID, and that's obviously continued. Frequency remains below 2009 levels. For us, they're still trickling upwards. For us, they're kind of close to, still approaching the pricing assumptions that we've been running with. So that's good, but it is a critical assumption. So there may be some variation of a few points there in people's positions. Don't know. But broadly, there is a benefit relative to 2019 levels at the moment. In terms of severity, people are calling out. Sometimes we call out lower numbers than competitors because, as I think James asked, we have some benefits from the repair centres. But, yeah, you've got to say that it's been somewhere around the upper end of 3 to 5 for the last couple of years, and those 2 years where the claims inflation haven't been priced yet by the market because they've been offsetting them in some sense against frequency benefits. So you think you've got that plus whatever is ahead still to come in some shape or form. And then offsetting that, you've got whiplash, a few points depending on, who you are and whether you use the government numbers. Very unclear at the moment what the benefits of whiplash, it's just too early to know where the whiplash reform benefits are going to land. So again, you've got an assumption in the mix. So I think, but all of that kind of points you to the market is 7% down, which means it really hasn't priced a couple of years of inflation. If you assume that it's logical because frequency is down, there's still a gap there. Whether it's 5 or 10 or whatever will depend on some of those assumptions, but there's clearly a gap. So I think that's where the market really is, and people may be making choices. I think there's a practical point with PPR. That's the only other thing that I would sort of flag, that if you make a pricing change now, you've only got a few weeks benefit from it. So there comes a point where you kind of apply most of your pricing resource to what does 2022 look like rather than what does 2021 look like. So, I'm not sure now I'd be overreading movements in the back end of this year because the volume of resource that will be focused on a post 22 world, and anything you do now has little validity or is only valid for a few weeks. I think the story from here is not very exciting in 2021, whatever direction it goes in, because most of the energy is going on 22. But the shorthand answer to all of that is the market hasn't priced all of the inflation. We've been pricing inflation. We've got more in the kit bag to come as we can kind of put resource back onto delivering benefits that's currently focused on getting us over the line for pricing practices. So we're feeling pretty positive, actually, as we go into next year. Which leads us on to transformation, which is your second question. So what are the benefits and so on? So I think, you know, why have we got more competitive through this year, through the second half? Really because I think, and I probably flagged this way back when you move over to the new platform, before you even do anything with it, you gain some increased sort of fidelity in the pricing because you're no longer translating languages, you know, pricing languages into deployment languages and so on. So you keep some granularity in that you didn't before, and we always thought there'd be some benefit attached to that. So that's part of, I think, what's improving competitiveness. We've also started the process of bringing in more external data sources. At this stage, it will be bringing us up to some of the better players in the market rather than taking us way out ahead of anywhere. But we have a list that we are working through of model improvements that are banked up behind that, which bring in other sources, use different techniques, and so on and so forth. At the moment, we are not putting many of those through because we're focused on getting pricing practices safely over the line. But those are sort of in the wings and building ready to go, which is why we're quite optimistic about the deployment opportunities as we go through 2022. And then on top of that, there are expense benefits which are attributable to the platform, which come as the book migrates over, which will be over the next 12 to 18 months, will build. And really that's around customer self-service levels. So it enables self-service in a way that we couldn't have done on the previous platform. If I give you an example, so 100% of claims can be done self-service now. Probably around 20% are, something like that. So, there are similar effects on the sales and service side. So it enables us to start evolving that as the book goes over and migrates over. So that's the other area to look for over time. So feeling pretty positive about the pricing position coming in relative to the market, and lots in the kit bags come through yet from the transformation.
It's really good to hear. Thank you, Penny. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you. The next question comes from Alex Evans from Credit Suisse. Please, Alex, your line is now open.
Hi, Penny.
Morning, Alex.
Morning, Penny. Thanks for taking my questions. I just wanted to have a little bit more colour on when you say pricing in line with severity claims inflation. You're meaning sort of across the total book, because, you know, when I look on a new business perspective, at least, it looks like pricing for Churchill is, you know, more in line with the market, and you're essentially saying pricing for the market is not taking into account inflation. So is it fair to assume that you're sort of quite materially ahead in the Direct Line brand there? And then I just wondered if it was possible to give a bit of colour of, you know, where the key drivers of growth is coming in motor at the moment. Is that sort of more Churchill based relative to sort of the existing Direct Line?
I think you're right that it varies across, you know, when I say that sort of portfolio levels, there will be some variation underneath it, but philosophically it's going in everywhere. That we make some trading choices around that as well. So it is going in on new business as well. I think the key drivers of growth, certainly we have seen PCW come back faster than direct as we've pulled out of the pandemic. I think there's all sorts of reasons for that. And the offset is we've seen renewals on direct hold up really, really well and strengthen. So as a book, probably not much story, but the new business story is definitely versus renewal story has definitely kind of differed between the two channels. I think is the essence of the picture. Pricing going through everywhere, but we do make different choices in different segments and different channels, so it's difficult to see it necessarily. Through this year, PCW stronger than direct on new business, but not so on renewals.
Okay, thank you.
And our next question comes from Will Hardcastle from UBS. Please, Will, your line is now open.
Morning.
Hey, morning, everyone. Quick question on home insurance, actually. Just thinking about the inflation levels and whether these have changed at all as the year's gone on. I think you mentioned you're running at the top end of the 3 to 5 in home as well. I guess, do you have any procurement contracts that help to mitigate inflation risk here? Or would you say you're equally exposed as the wider market to things like labour costs, material cost inflation, et cetera?
Great question. So I think, look, we're somewhere around the upper zone. I wouldn't overread the, I think we get quite granular on whether it's 3% or 4% or 5%. It's somewhere around the top. And I think over the course of the year, I think it's fair to say that it's been pretty, it's run fine all the way through. We're still kind of, it's running pretty fine inflation. We're conscious of, though, as we look at construction costs, it's only a relatively small part of the book is the first thing to say. So, you know, a lot of home claims are, you know, jewelry and electrical goods and carpets and so on and so forth. And although we're seeing supply chain glitches in some of those places, nothing that's really changing that you can't maneuver around, for want of a better description, that's changing the face of things. And lots of things are cash settled anyway. So really the question area is more around sort of construction costs, where clearly there is inflationary pressure across the markets, not just in insurance. And our sense is that we've kept it tight through this year and we've been able to manage it within that zone. But if that pressure keeps building, then there is kind of some inflationary pressure because we are not immune. And in terms of contracts, you're right, we have contracts with suppliers that roll at certain dates, so you do get some protection for a spell that may not be there forever, and I suspect that's the same with other significant players as well. So our sense is that there is a kind of building pressure in the market that might lift us slightly, and that we're kind of monitoring that very closely, which is why I say we're sort of at or around the top of the range.
That's really helpful. I guess just, this is probably my naivety, but, you know, construction as a percentage of home claims, are we talking 10%, 20% by the sounds of what you're saying? Is it in that range?
It's in that sphere, and it's quite difficult to peel apart because even within a claim, you know, it depends. If you have an escape of water claim, it depends on what component of that is. You know, is there, so it's not even as simple as all escape of water claims will be doing X or, you know, so on and so forth. But it'll be that sphere rather than higher.
Brilliant. Thanks, Penny.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Rhea Shah from Deutsche Bank. Rhea, please, your line is now open.
Thanks. Thank you very much. Two questions for me. So the first one, morning, Penny. The first one's on motor mix. How has the mix been developing over the last few months? And just looking forward into the FCA's reforms, is there any danger that more established players or insurers like yourself could lose out on new and younger drivers in the first few months of the year if there's kind of continued competition? And then my second question, which is slightly different to the theme of today, but how should we be thinking about investment income guidance looking out over the next couple of years in a rising yield environment?
Brilliant, and I'm really excited because it means that Neil's got a question. So just on mix, I think the story on mix is really a COVID one rather than a pricing practices one at the moment. So, because you saw through 2020, get my years right, 2020 and into 2021, there were less new drivers coming into the market. You know, we saw sort of AVP do some strange shapes through last year because of that and because of less new cars in the market. Now, although, you know, that's correcting but not corrected, I would say. So there are still some mix shifts in the market. I don't think our book is doing anything particularly dramatic compared to anybody else's in that regard, or I'm not consciously so. So I think that's probably the story on mix still correcting, if you like. I think coming into next year, I don't know that there's a particular feature of what will happen to young drivers versus anything else, but certainly I suspect you will see people have more flexibility of pricing in segments that they don't have large back books in. So you may see some movement in that space, or people creating sub brands or targeting with different channels, or that's kind of what will happen. So I don't think there's a clear outcome of automatically X, Y, and Z will happen. I still think the big players have dominant forces in this market. So you may see some nimble players doing specific things. Don't know. But I wouldn't overread at this stage what will happen to any one particular player. I think we let it settle out over the course of next year, the next few months. Neil.
So I take investment income. So thanks for the question. So you'll probably remember we ticked up the investment income guidance for this year from 1.5 to 1.6% at the half year. If I look at what's happened since then, you've clearly got a rise in risk-free rates through to now, but you've seen a consistent slight tightening on credit as we've gone through the second half of the year. So net-net, I think I said at the half year, the 1.6 for this year is pretty much a good platform for next year. If you look longer term, the impact of rates will start to feed through the book, but obviously the maturity profile is that we're only reinvesting a third of the portfolio each year, so it takes a while to work through the book. So I think good thing is rates going up underpins where we are today. I think it needs to move a bit further or start to see credit markets moving to get a lot more upside.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, and the next question comes from Ivan Bokhmat from Barclays. Please, Ivan, your line is now open.
Hi, good morning. I've got a couple of questions, please. So the first one is back to the guidance and combined ratio. So for this year, you're talking about 90 to 95%, and if my math is correct, that means that for the second half, you'll be at the top end of your midterm range or possibly slightly above it. So I was just wondering if you could maybe try to outline the main drivers combined ratio to return back into the range for 2022. Is it mainly expenses? Do you have any particular assumptions on pricing, et cetera? And the second question is actually on capital, so maybe also for Neil. Maybe you could give us an update on the capital generation second half, and just related to your comments about first quarter being very uncertain, do you think it would be appropriate to expect to return to 160% solvency ratio with your capital distribution at the year end? Thanks.
Excellent. Thanks, Christian. So on the core, the simplest way to think through it is that the 90 to 92 or the 3-point benefit versus the 93 to 95 is all down to motor frequency in the first half. So that was about, when you size that, it's about a 3-point in inverted commas one-off benefit. That's what's flowed through into the 90 to 92. Clearly, between first half and second half, there's always a split between when reserve releases come through, and don't forget the first half, there's no weather as well, although all these numbers are normalised. So big moving part is the one-off benefits from lower frequency in the first half. You shouldn't take anything from that guidance that is inconsistent with the medium-term 93 to 95. So that's the first point. Second point on capital. As I said at the half year, we're looking to move back down to the middle of the range, to the 160 percent, still the position today. Of course, any uncertainty we will generally take into account within the SCR for that type of risk rather than within the range. But let's see when we get there what we decide to do. But still pretty confident on the capital position generally.
Maybe one follow-up. Would you consider another buyback if you're well above the range?
So, of course, look, any decision we take on that will be done at year end. You know our track record, which is if we think we have excess capital, we have consistently returned to shareholders. I think, you know, given where we are today, you know, we're buying back stock, we think is a very attractive price in the marketplace.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ming Su from Panmure Gordon. Please, Ming, your line is now open.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Two questions, please. First question is around Whiplash. What have you seen so far? I think Penny had a comment earlier saying it's still early days to see where it will land. So I just wondering whether you could give some color on this and you know, when do you suppose this could settle at some point? And second is share buyback. And I think you've always commented on, you know, you're buying back the share at quite attractive price, good ROE. But if I look at your buyback program, which started on the 9th of March, your share price was £3.20. And then if I look at the share price now, even at just the interim dividend, it just shows that your buyback hasn't really done anything to the share price. I mean, at the full year, you know, would you reconsider going back to the special dividend? Because that seems to be the preferred way to income holders. Thank you.
Whiplash, I mean, not much to add, really. I think whilst, so when it was effective 31st of May, I think whilst the industry was ready, I'm not sure that all the solicitors and claims management firms and so on had got their heads around the process. So we saw a sort of slowdown through the summer while, you know, things worked through the system, if you like. So I think at this stage, nothing that meaningfully we would flag out, and we'll give a little bit more colour at year end, by hopefully which time it'll be clearer what's happening and whether there are any trends of note in there.
And on the share buyback versus special div question, well, I guess we're open-minded. We don't have a kind of we have to do one or the other. We look at the position at the time with the evidence we've got. At the moment, we think a buyback is the best approach. I'm not sure that either necessarily would be driving the share price today. You know, and the return of capital is a long-term game. But we're returning capital because it's the right thing to do to create value in the long term. So I'm not sure it's necessarily such a driver of short-term share price performance.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Gordon Aitken from RBC. Please, Gordon, your line is now open.
Morning. Oh, very quiet. Hi, Gordon, are you there?
Hey, Penny, how are you doing? A couple of questions, please. First, what do you think happens to the price comparison channel post 1st of January 22? And maybe even talk about next year, but also talk about over the medium term, given that it's going to take customers a while to change what they do. And also, another question on the pricing review. From what you've said, my sense is that you think you've repriced your back book, probably maybe to a slightly greater extent than others, if you can say if that's right. And if it is, do you then need to, well, the beauty of it is you don't need to raise new business rates as fast as others. So is this an opportunity to either gain share or to gain margin? Thanks.
Thanks, Gordon. So PCWs, I think perhaps the way if the FCA achieve what they set out to do, it will reduce the amount of movement in the market. So in that sense, you would expect, and actually some of the things that you are seeing in the market now around home pricing and people trying to take share and so would again suggest that people believe that customers will stay around for longer in this set of scenarios, in which case you would see less volume moving logically through any acquisition channel, including the PCW. So that said, I think there are many things that drive people to move insurance products, service, changes in life, you know, lifestyle and so on and so forth. So I think there's still plenty of ammunition left in the PCW channels as well. So it's not the only thing driving it. probably the position on PCWs. In terms of pricing review, I'm not going to predict or tell you what I think our pricing will do versus other people's. But we have, yes, taken the action that we think we need to take on the tail. So we are not coming into 1st of January trying to make those adjustments. Those have already kind of gone through the book, if you like. I would imagine that others with large books have been making moves as well, but that's a question for them rather than for me. I would say that a lot of those players sit around the ABI table, which had long before pricing practices came onto the horizon, had set themselves some guidance as to how they'd address this. So I'd be pretty confident that people would be moving their books. You'd have to ask them how fast and to what degree. So you're right that 1st of January is much more about leveling up pricing in the early tenures than kind of dealing with any tail issues. So that's where the focus will be. I don't have a crystal ball as to where others sit in that path, so whether our movements will differ from theirs and to what degree.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from James Shuck from Citi. Please, James, your line is now open.
Thanks. Good morning.
Morning, James.
Good morning. Just on frequency, I think lots of comments about the 2021 experience. Just interested to get your take on how much of the frequency improvement is actually sustainable. People are using cars in different ways, different times of the day. Do you think we're going to remain below 2019 levels? If so, how much? And then kind of same theme of claims inflation. Are you seeing any trends to kind of repairing cars rather than totaling them and hence putting more people through your garage networks, but then maybe this is leading to a bit more of a backlog because then you have to fix the cars and that might be affecting net promoter scores. Comments around that might help. And then secondly, lots of comments around FCA reforms around pricing practice. Interested to get your take around the duty of care, which I believe is legislative timeline now from Parliament. So keen to get your thoughts around add-ons and any other things we should be considering around that. Thank you.
I love that. I'm sure that's three questions in two. So frequency. I think we said at half year, and it's still the case that driving miles definitely back up to pre-pandemic levels. Frequency still below. And I think we are assuming that it remains below. I won't give you the exact number, but and why are we assuming that? Because when we look at the different kind of mileage, it's largely commuter traffic changing shape. And when we look at our business and other businesses, we think the mixed model ways of working and so on will continue in some shape or form. Now, the thing that's difficult to predict is exactly where that point will end up. So there clearly is still judgments in that. But that movement, although still increasing, is kind of the frequency levels, although increasing, are kind of trickling up rather than having stopped moving or shooting up. So it feels as though we're starting to move into, the sort of the endpoint territory. So and that will be a little below what it was in 2019. But, you're still susceptible to, increase, lockdowns or actually, on the other side, increase in confidence over time. But when we look at this from an operational perspective rather than a frequency perspective, and we look at our, talk to our people, there really is a move to hold on to a sort of mixed model way of working, and I think lots of businesses are seeing that. So I think it's reasonable to assume that there is a structural long-term benefit there. The exact, amount of that, we will all zero in on over time. So I think that's claims frequency. The second part of the question was a severity. Oh, yes, so it was around, what are we doing in the repair centres and what opportunities and what risks are there? So You're right, there's a number of factors kind of involved in a kind of the severity question. So supply chains, for instance, we're seeing bits and pieces. Sometimes there are delivery issues, sometimes there are particular parts issues. All of them at the moment seem to be kind of smoothable out rather than crisis, you know, levels, if you like, rather than creating real strain, with exception of the one I flagged, which is secondhand car prices. You're right that we can flex in the repair centres, especially with frequency down. So there are some, you know, like everywhere, there are skills shortages at the moment. You're seeing that across pretty much every industry. So there is some of that happening in the repair networks beyond hours, not just ours. But actually, with the frequency levels that they are, we're able to do a greater proportion in-house. And so that gives us a benefit overall. So I think it's fair to say that having a repair network is an advantage, especially when severity is spiking, especially when it's spiking for the reasons it is. So certainly the case. What all that works out to in terms of what, you know, our inflation relative to others, too early to tell. So we would say we're at the top end of the range, somewhere around there. I'll let others call what they're seeing separately. And the third question was a duty of care question, so it's a completely different. I think duty of care, a few things, and not everyone on the call maybe as close to it as you are, but so yes, definitely the FCA will do something to bring a duty of care or something of that nature in. Legislation requires them to do so, I think, over the course of next year, next summer, I think. When you talk to the FCA, how do they think about it? They think about it as they consider in GI that they have done a lot of the things that they want to do. So they see duty care of raising the bar across all kind of areas of financial services. So the fact that they've done pricing practices, vulnerable customers in our industry, and they've done IDD before that on the distribution side, they're kind of saying, or literally saying, actually, we think we've covered the bases in GI. So until you see the detail, and they're not due to consult on it until December, no one will know exactly what that means. But I'm confident that it's not aimed at GI, if you like, and I'm confident that we'll be less impacted than some other industry areas, and we'll wait and see. It's got a long way to go before we know what the exact path that is.
Okay, that's very helpful, Penny. Just one point of clarification. Are you, because of the price of secondhand cars, are you repairing them more than you are writing them off? And is that not leading to any backlog in your repair networks?
Sorry, you did ask that question, and I've got to answer it. So we will be. It will change the point of that judgment, absolutely. No, we're not seeing more of a backlog of repairs, and yes, NPS scores are holding up, and customer services is there.
Wonderful, very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Faizan Lakhani from HSBC. Please, Faizan, your line is now open.
Good morning.
I just had a few questions. Could you potentially look to run off your most profitable distribution channels to maintain the margins on your back book? That was question one. Question two, we've talked a fair bit about inflation in households, but some commentators have pointed to a benefit from COVID from lower levels of burglaries and being more aware at home. Could you potentially quantify what benefit, if any, you've had from COVID over the past 9 months? And the final one is a cheeky small question. Could you provide a split between the businesses that are in the short tenure versus sort of the tail that you've already dealt with? Thank you.
I didn't quite catch the last one, but let me do the first two first. Runoff is an extreme word, so not planning to put any parts of the business into runoff, if that's the question. I think the real essence of this is when we look at our book segment by segment, cohort by cohort, we can make choices about where we hold prices. And in areas where it's sensible to do so, we will seek to, we'll make the choice basically that protects shareholder value within the bounds of being comfortable that it delivers fair outcomes for customers. As I said, we've already been through the latter question, so our focus will be on what delivers the most most value for shareholders, and we will dial in and out of segments with different brands and different channels as appropriate to get there. But we're not putting any parts of the book into runoff. Inflation in home, I think, was the second one. Where broadly what you're, I think there's, it's all very muted now and pretty much back to COVID levels. There are some mixed differentials, so you're getting, escape of water costs are lower because people identify them faster, largely because they're in their homes. We're possibly seeing some increase in things like drains, which might be to do with the number of houses that, are having surveys because the housing market's been more buoyant. We're seeing more claims on things like kind of damage in the home because there are more people in there. So mix shifting overall, pretty much dialing where it was pre-COVID. And I didn't catch all of the cheeky third question.
You mentioned you've done a lot of work around the tail in terms of sorting out the issues prior to the FCA pricing review, and there's still some work to be done on the shorter tenures that will probably happen in January. Could you potentially provide a split in terms of what you categorise as tail and what as short tail in your back book, roughly as a percentage?
No, the way we think about it is over a 5-year tenure, we check every customer policy price. So that's the way we think about it. So I don't think it's really I don't have the number, but I don't think it's that relevant to say it's X percent or Y percent. It's more the path every journey goes, every customer goes on.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. And our last question comes from Alan Devlin from Goldman Sachs. Please, Alan, your line is now open.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much.
Morning.
A couple of questions from me. First of all, just to follow up from your answer to Gordon's question, if the FCA is successful in increasing retentions, lowering churn, how does that change your kind of view on your view of marketing, how much money you spend marketing, which is kind of the acquisition cost for the Direct Line brand going into next year? And then the second question on your EV proposition, I want to give some more color on what you're doing there, and what is your market share of the EV new business higher than the overall business, and what kind of advantage does your claims network give you in the EV, given you spend a lot of money training people to fix these vehicles? Thanks.
Brilliant. I'm not going to give you a direct answer on what we're going to do on marketing, because that's in the competitive zone, Alan. But I'll say this: over time, the way we think about the amount of marketing spend that we do is linked to the amount of value that we see in customers. So we will, as we see what customer behaviour does through this and what retention levels do, we will reassess the overall long-term value equation for each customer, and that will set the parameters on the acquisition costs we're prepared to pay. So it kind of works the other way around. So we do have a view as to what we'll do on day one, but really it's much less important than that overriding point that it will flex over time, dependent on how customer behavior settles in the new market. Evie, yes, fantastic. So we believe there aren't published market share numbers on the EV segment, so proving something is different, but we believe we punch beyond our weight in terms of share, partly because the Tesla introduced the relationships and so on that we have, and we traditionally have done, and we've got good insight because for some years we've been doing that. And so that's given us insight on repair around EVs over a number of years. What are we doing for customers? So obviously we're offering an insurance product, but we're also offering a package of things around that to help customers make the transition, including access to various charging networks, discounts on that, help with getting subsidies, education online as to different cars, ranges, different attributes. So we've teamed up with a startup called Electrifying, who do a lot of that research content and are super engaging around that. Access to people to come and set up, charging points in your drive, and so on and so forth. So the full kind of package of things that an individual customer will have to go through to move to an EV, and the aim is just to make it in line with the brand as easy as we can for people to make that transition. So that's really kind of the aim. We continue, as you say, to invest in the training of our mechanics and our engineers, to get them all EV, and it's not just EV, it's actually a lot of the technology that goes in cars, modern cars, that are around that as well, so that we can be leading edge. And as time moves on and our pricing capabilities improve, then we would seek to bring those, you know, today there's not much ability for us to use that knowledge in our pricing, but over time we see that as a real opportunity as well. So there's a package of reasons why we think we kind of have a right to be successful in EV, building on the start that we already had. And this, you know, proposition for customers is one piece of that jigsaw.
Cool. Excellent. Thanks. Thanks for answering.
Brilliant. So is that the last question, Juan?
Yeah, we currently have no further questions. I will now hand over to you, Penny James, for any final remarks.
Brilliant. Thank you. I mean, thank you. Wow. Wealth of questions off a 1.5-page release. But look, I just leave you with, I think, you know, we feel well positioned in the markets at the moment. We're on track for pricing practices. We're positive about how we've positioned both, you know, in the motor market, given its challenges, and in home coming into PPR. We know we've got a number of levers up our sleeve, some of which, you know, you're already aware of, and some that the transformation will bring us beyond that. So we feel positive about how we're set as we look ahead. And the final thing I will do is a plug for November the 17th for anyone who wants to understand a little bit more about our commercial growth business and what's been driving the growth there. But other than that, I shall stop there and thank you all for joining us. Have a good day.